This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Tzivah Hashem et Moshe ken asu b'nei Yisrael. Like everything which God had commanded Moshe, so the children of Israel had done et kol ha'avodah, all the work. Vayar Moshe et kol ha'mlacha, and Moshe saw all the work. V'hinei asu ota kasher tzivah Hashem, and behold, they had done it as God had commanded. Ken asu, so they had done it. Vayavarech ota Moshe, and Moshe blessed them. The primary question being the repetitiveness of it. First sentence says they did everything which God commanded them. Second, their sentences, and Moshe saw that they did it exactly as God commanded them. The basic difference between the two sentences is in the use of the Hebrew word chosen to describe the word work. Where the first pasuk says, "Kein asu b'nei Yisrael," so the Jews did et kol ha'avodah, using the word avodah, and afterwards it says, "Vayar Moshe et kol ha'melacha," that Moshe saw all the melacha. First one is avodah, the second one is melacha. The difference between the two words: melacha is the word used in Vayechulam. Vayechulam Hashemayim Vayechulam Hashemayim Vayechul Tzva'am Vayechul Elokim Bayom Hashvi'i Et Kol Melachto Asher Asa. The word melacha is used three times there. The creation of the world is described by the word melacha. That's melacha. It's a creative act. It's something made out of nothing. The first understanding of melacha. Secondly, melacha is something made or created by somebody for his own needs. The Ribbono Shel Olam didn't create the world for us. He created the world because he wanted to create it. He wasn't obliged by anybody to create the world. Avodah is the opposite. Avodah, you're working for someone. It comes from the word eved, from a slave. Avodah, you're not just doing it for your own needs, you're doing it for some other need, for somebody else you're doing it. That's avodah. And it's not necessarily creative. In the Torah, the word avodah is only used in two senses. Either in terms of service of God, where we talk about the avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, the service that used to go on, the work that used to go on in the Beis HaMikdash, or in terms of slavery, the avodah which the Jews experienced in Egypt and so on. Those are the only two forms of the word avodah is really expressed in the Torah. A couple of minor exceptions, but basically that's where the word avodah is. On Shabbos we're told, lo tasu kol melacha. It's melacha, it's creative work which is prohibited. On Yom Tov, the wording is different. You notice from the learning what it is for Yom Tov. Kol melechet avodah. Right, it's only for Yom Tov. For Shabbos it's melacha, and for Yom Tov it's called melechet. Learn out from that on Yom Tov you're allowed to cook. Poshim says, the price that works more or less like this. Melechet Avodah says you're only not allowed to do that melacha which is also avodah. Melacha which is for something else, you're not allowed to do. But melacha which is for nothing but yourself, you're allowed to do. And that's as the Gemara comes to teach us that you're allowed to do anything that you require for your immediate consumption. Because that's not for anybody else, that's because you need it, because your body needs it in order to carry out its bodily, physical functions. That's melechet avodah, is everything except that particular type of melacha, which is very, very self-centered melacha. A very self-centered melacha you're allowed to do. And it's strange that Yom Tov seems to contain some of a bit of self-centeredness in it. There's the concept in Yom Tov of Chatzi LaHashem and Chatzi LaChem, half of Yom Tov being for the Ribbono Shel Olam and half for us. Somehow the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to indulge a little bit on Yom Tov. So it's melechet avodah, only that melacha which is in no way indulgent is not allowed to be done. But the melacha which is totally indulgence is allowed to be done. You see from there very clearly the difference in the two words avodah and melacha. Where the Torah only excludes melacha, the word melacha, that comes to include any form of creative activity. Where the Torah says melechet avodah, it only comes to exclude non-egocentric melacha. So the avodah is the element of non-egocentricity in melacha. Melacha is a broad category that includes all kinds of melacha. Avodah is only that kind of melacha, or rather avodah is outward, working for somebody else. Melechet avodah is creative activity which is not self-centered, which is not egocentric. So there are two things that are noted here. The first thing is that the Am Yisrael built the Mishkan in a way that it was avoda. They did it for someone else, they did it for the Ribbono Shel Olam. The second thing is it was melacha, it was a creative experience. Now let's look at the psukim a little bit more carefully. Vayam Moshe et kol ha-melacha, and Moshe saw all the melacha, v'hinei asu ota, and behold, they had done it, kasher tzivo Hashem, kein asu, exactly as God had commanded them, that's the way they did it. The word hinei is an expression of bewilderment, of amazement. V'hinei, do you know what? It actually happened that they did it exactly the way the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed them to do it. What's so fantastic about that? They were shown exactly what to do and they did it. What's so wonderful about that? It's like an architect getting excited if he sees that they built the building as he designed it. If they didn't, it has to be taken down. It's expected that they build the building as he designed it. But if Ribbono Shel Olam designed the Mishkan and it went into every detail of exactly where it goes, where everything goes and what everything is, and the Torah says that Moshe was surprised to see that they had done it Kasher Tzivo Hashem, exactly as God has in fact commanded them. But it's difficult to do something exactly as God commands you, particularly if you have a bit of creativity. Imagine if I'm a painter and I'm trying to produce a work of art which is the essence of beauty, and the real expert on beauty, the world accepted expert on beauty, comes and says to me while I'm busy battling on this painting, he says, forget it, scrap your canvas, I'll design a painting for you, paint that, that will be the most beautiful thing you can possibly paint. Am I going to do it? Well, it depends. If my aim is really to produce something beautiful, I should do it. If my aim is self-centered, I want to produce something, then I won't be doing it. So anybody who has a bit of self-centeredness, anybody who has a little bit of egocentricity, anybody who's a bit of an artist and who has the ability to make something himself, it's like what we said last night, that Adam rotze bekav shelo mitisha kavin shechavero, that a man would rather have his own little thing than have nine things of somebody else. And we discussed last night, in fact, that applies only to gashmias. It applies only to material things. A person would rather achieve something himself a little bit than be given too much on a plate. But when it comes to things spiritual and to absolute things, there has to be the willingness to be part of something big rather than to be central to something small. But it's not easy. And the more creative and talented one is, the more difficult it is to accept a second fiddle to something big than a first fiddle to something small. And that's really the test when one's busy with his painting. If one's able to tear up one's own canvas and say, he's right. If I really want to make something beautiful, I must copy his painting. That will be the most beautiful thing I can do. If I'm just here to show myself off or to express myself, that's something else. But then I'm not out to produce beauty. It was surprising to Moshe that a nation of such proud people and a nation of such self-centered people and such confident people were able to create a Mishkan exactly as the Ribbono Shel Olam required that the Mishkan be created. That to Moshe was a source of surprise. But still, how much surprise is it that it's got to, that the word Vehineh has to be used, that the Torah has to report that Moshe was amazed by this, that it was done right? Yeah, Moshe was amazed, and that's the first part of that same pasuk. Vayar Moshe et kol ha-melacha, Moshe saw all the melacha. And you know what? It was melacha and it was like the Ribbono Shel Olam did. It was a work of art, it was original. It was absolutely original and it was exactly as God wanted it. Now how's that possible? That's something which on the surface appears impossible. That's what Moshe was amazed at. That's the word behinei. Moshe had perceived something, had noticed a work of art which was hitherto inconceivable. That somebody should produce exactly what an architect has designed, what somebody else has designed, and yet it's a complete work of art in itself. Because why won't I tear up my own canvas and take the other person's work of art and copy it? Because that's fake. It's not original. It's not my own. I don't feel any relationship with it. I'm copying. I'm not an artist. An artist has to produce something of his own. Moshe is amazed. He's not amazed that they did it, that they did it exactly as the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed. Obviously they would do it exactly as the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed. But he's amazed that Vayar Moshe et kol ha-melacha, he saw the tremendous degree of melacha, kol meaning not quantitative but qualitative. The extent of melacha involved here, this extent of originality and of artistic work here. V'hinei, not only that, you behold, asu ata kasher tzivah Hashem. It was also exactly as God commanded that. How is that possible? In fact, it's a good question. How is it possible? Either way, it's either been copied from God's design, in which case it's not melacha, or it's melacha, in which case it's not God's design. How can you have a work of art which is perfect in its beauty and designed by an ordinary person? That's answered in the first pasuk. And this is not Vayar Moshe. The first pasuk is not in Moshe's soul. This is not something anybody can see. This is the Torah attesting to the fact. Kechol asher tivar Hashem et Moshe, exactly as God had commanded Moshe, kein asu b'nei Yisrael et kol ha'avodah. That's how the B'nai Yisrael did all the avodah. It was avodah. They were avodim, they were slaves. Let's look at that a little bit more carefully. The Netziv asks, in any case, he says, how is it possible that there was no mistake? Just on the physical level, apart from the arts and everything else, he just says, how is it possible that they made such a complicated design as the Mishkan without a single mistake? Moshe apparently hadn't seen it up till the stage. It was all done on their own, and it was, the finished product was presented to him, and he examined it and inspected it, and he found that everything was perfect. Asks the Netziv, when did they have the time to learn all the details of exactly how to make it? Answers the Netziv, Uve'emet, really, he says, kol ze nase b'koach b'tzalem. This was all done under the direction of b'tzalem. Shehaya b'tzel kel. The word b'tzalel comes from two words, tzel kel, the shadow of God. He was in the shadow of God. V'kivein me'atzmo hilchot ha'mishkan. I'll explain that now. An Eved, who's our prime example of an Eved, is Eliezer. Eliezer, if you read the story of Eliezer, it's an original story. Who dreamed up the idea of sitting at the well and testing the girl the way he did? Eliezer did himself. Nobody gave him the idea. Whose idea was it to use all the dramatic skills that he used when he came to Lava, and he retold the whole story in a most fantastic and dramatic way, and he wouldn't eat until he'd spoken the story. You remember we discussed one Friday night that he kept them hungry. He used all the dramatic ability that he had to ensure that the answer would be what he wanted it to be. Who taught him all that? He did himself. So an Eved is not, our concept of an Eved is not a person who's got no originality. The most amazing thing of the story of Eliezer is the originality. That he dreamed up such an incredible scheme, and it wouldn't have worked without that. It was the beauty of the scheme, and it was the originality of the scheme which really brought the whole story about. Yet what is he out to do? He's out to get a girl for Yitzchak. Why? Because that's what Avraham wants. What Eliezer did was merged his will with Avraham's will. There's no way you can use that originality if you're aiming somewhere different. Although the Gemara tells us that Eliezer did have some other ideas in his mind, but they were very much submerged ideas, they weren't conscious ideas at all. His conscious idea, the concept of an Eved, is to merge his will with the will of his master. What he wants is what his master wants. An Eved is not one who carries out orders. An Eved is one who uses his own originality and his own personality to achieve that which he knows his master wants. And that's what the Netziv says here about Betzalel. Kiven me'atzmo hilchot ha'mishkan. He did it himself, and he was mechave in the right halachas. He didn't have a plan to follow. Well, the plan that he had to follow was very scanty, and he didn't have time enough to study it. He did it intuitively, and it came out right. One might say that's a miracle, but I don't think so. You know, there's the tremendous conflict in learning altogether. This is basically the point of the shiur. The role, first of all, of a chidush in Torah, saying something new. And secondly, what kind of chiddush is one permitted to say? And I mentioned to you on Thursday night the two views we had, the Brisker view and the view of Rav Shimon Shkop, where Rav Shimon Shkop was criticized really for using his own intellect too much. And it was felt that his own intellect, or any human intellect, is too inadequate to understand the ins and outs of Torah to that extent. All that we're entitled to do is understand what is written, not why it's written. And all we're allowed to do is to use our intellect to manipulate what is written, to use what is written, to formalize with it. But not to analyze it, not to really understand it, why it's written and what it really means, and to come out with a new approach to learning and to Yiddishkeit and to everything, that a lot of people felt was going too far. I think that's not correct. I think that with certain conditions, one's entitled to go terribly far. And in fact, that's what is meant by V'tein Chalkein V'Besor Asecha, where you pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam three times on a Shabbos. You ask the Ribbono Shel Olam to give you your chelek in Torah, to give you your part in Torah. What does that mean? That the Torah is incomplete without you. That means that there's something that the Torah is lacking. The world of Torah is lacking some information, is lacking some chiddush, unless you have the opportunity to express it. Each Jew has a contribution to make to the Torah, and it's like one of these puzzles. The little pieces missing out. Each person has his own piece which he has to contribute, which he has to put into Torah. And if he doesn't, it will never be there. It will always be missing. That's the concept that we're almost contributing to the very formulation of Torah. That's what's really meant when we're told that Moshe was told by the Ribbono Shel'olam every chiddush which every little child was going to be mechadish one day. That is, that the whole of Torah is complete. When God gave Moshe the Torah, it included every chiddush, every creative thought that every little child was ever going to have in Torah. That formed Torah. Now what happens if that little child doesn't have that creative thought that he was planned to have? It's missing. There's a piece from the puzzle missing. And we'll never get there. Moshe knew it because he saw the whole Torah. But that child or that individual, whoever it is, hasn't completed the Torah. He has a part to give to the Torah which he hasn't given. And each single individual, there's nobody who doesn't have that part to give. The question is, how, what kind of a part is it, and how, what is the preparation required in order to be in a position to give that? The incredible thing in the Beit HaMikdash here is that Bezalel firstly made himself an Eved. First it was Avoda. After it was Avoda, it became Melacha. What does that mean? His first effort was to study the matter sufficiently thoroughly, and we'll discuss in a moment how one does that, to merge his feelings of what is right and how it should be with the Ribbono Shel'olam. And then he let himself go spontaneously. In other words, what's the solution to the guy who's battling to produce this fantastic work of art, and some other expert comes and says, copy this is the most perfect you'll ever get it. His solution is very simple. Give me your work of art, let me study it. And he should sit and study it and study it and study it. And then he should destroy that good work of art and on his own free bat make a new one. Then you have something which is as beautiful as it could possibly be and produced by him and spontaneously. But it will be far greater than it would have been hadn't he studied it. Had Bezalel and the people just gone and spontaneously made a Mishkan, it wouldn't have been Kasher Tzivo Hashem. Wouldn't have been perfect. It wouldn't have been right. But once Bezalel first regarded it as avodah, as slavery, just has to be done, has to be understood without any question, then he got to the point where he could let himself go spontaneously and he could produce a malachi, he could produce a work of art. We have the same thing here. The act of learning is going to be one of two. It's either going to be stagnant and dry. If it's going to be technical learning, you're simply going to learn what is there. It's going to be to lack totally in dynamic and in feeling. Or if you're going to become original, it's going to be wrong. So we see you have the choice of incorrect learning, of wrong learning and wrong conclusions, or stagnant learning. There's only one way to get around it, and that is first to become an Eved Hashem and to become an Eved of Torah, to make sure that one has merged one's own intellect with the intellect of Torah. And then let yourself run wild, and it's okay. And so both the critics of Reb Shimon Shkop and Reb Shimon Shkop are right. And the critics of Reb Shimon Shkop say, you're coming along with all sorts of nice theories, but who says it's Torah? Reb Shimon Shkop's answer to that is, as long as I am a walking Sefer Torah, as long as I am an Eved Hashem, as long as I have made myself into a kli, have made myself into a utensil which is Torah, anything that comes out of me is Torah. That's why we've had, I think I've mentioned to you before, so in the Gedolim we get very upset if they ask the Shaila and then somebody says to them, where does it say so? It's irrelevant where it says so. It's come out of his mouth. There's no greater authority than that it should have come out of his mouth. If Moshe Feinstein says kosher, or Moshe Feinstein says Torah, it makes no difference where it's written. It's absolutely irrelevant. It's the authority is his mouth, not where it's written. But how does one get to that level? Avoda. It has to be Avoda first. One has to be an Eved. One has to be sure. Like Eliezer. Eliezer can't go using his own originality to find a girl for Yitzchak if his desires and his plans and his aims aren't totally the same as Avram's. And in fact, until his personality and character merges with Avram, that they're inseparable, then he can allow himself to act spontaneously and intuitively and be part of Avram. It's almost like creating a mold. Once the mold has been created, whatever you put into it will come out the right shape. The important thing is to see that the mold is right. The same thing here, one has to regard oneself as a mold. A lot of raw material goes in and a lot comes out. There's only one way you can be sure that what comes out is Torah, irrespective of what went in. It makes no difference what rubbish goes in. If the mold is right, what comes out will be Torah. And one has an example of that with the case of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel when they were on the Temple Mount and they saw this beautiful woman, how they were able to turn what any of us might regard as a negative experience Torah-wise into a thoroughly positive experience Torah-wise. How did they do it? Because the mold was right. Whatever you feed into a mold where the mold is right, the thing will come out right. Obviously, the better the quality of what you feed in, the better the quality of what you get out. But the basic authenticity will be the same. It will be an authentic product of that mold. But the mold has to be right. So what we're talking about here in developing, before one can allow oneself the right to be mechadesh in Torah, and being mechadesh in Torah means to say anything that isn't written word for word, even to explain something as being mechadesh. To say that's what Rashi means is a chiddush. Unless that's what Rashi says, clearly, word for word. In other words, if you're doing anything more than translating, even translating is a bit of a chiddush sometimes. But if one's doing anything more than translating, that's why, by the way, we have Unkelus on the side of the Chumash. You've got to be somebody to translate as well. That's the only really authentic translation we have. The Hirsch translation is also an authentic translation. But there are very few translations which have been made by Kalim. By people who are entitled to be mechadish, because the translation is a chiddush. Comes out really. The one thing one can do safely is read. You can read whatever you like, you can read and read and read, but don't try and understand. In other words, what I'm saying is that even the critics of Reb Shimon are in trouble. Even to understand what is there, you have to be a kli, because understanding what is there is also interpretation. If it's anything more than word for word translation, you're already interpreting. So who's going to say you can interpret that far and not further? Who's going to say that this approach interprets to a sufficient degree and that the other approach interprets too far? What's important is that the interpreter, whoever he is a kli, is a mold. And there's only one way that one can become an eved, and that's through avoda, through work. And it's what we call the omal of Torah, the toil of Torah. We don't use the word avoda, we don't use the word malacha, we use the word omal, which is sweat. It's hard labor, sweat. Rabbi Abramsky used to give a very famous Gemara shir in Beit Vagan every Shabbos. Beit Vagan is a place where every balabos is a rov. So you've got to be quite someone to give a shir there. And even the balabatim aren't rabbonim, think they're rabbonim. And it's a difficult place to give a shir. And he used to give a shir, and I used to get a couple of hundred people coming to the shir every Shabbos. And it wasn't often that people used to ask him questions in the shir, and the reason was the following. Once somebody put up their hand and asked a question, and he stopped the shir in silence. People thought that the question must have been something fantastic, but I don't think it stopped. He says to him, tell me, he says, how many times have you learnt the Gemara? And I says, 9 times I learnt this afternoon before I came to the shir. He says, 9 times? You learnt the Gemara 9 times? He says, I've learnt the Gemara 150 times before I gave the shir. You learnt it 9 times and you have the chutzpah to ask me a question in my shir? That's true. What right have you even got to expect to understand what's going on? If you haven't toiled over it, if you haven't laboured over it, what right have you got to do anything more but sit in the corner and shuffle away and listen? You know, maybe you'll pick up something. But to acquire Torah, to make Torah part of you, to be able to use Torah, to become a Torah person without honor, without labor, and by labor I mean sweat literally, I really do. Just don't think that you've sweated until the water starts dripping off. Like when we go to dinner, actually, is when I go to dinner. you know, I feel that it's going well when the carpet starts getting wet. I feel we're doing something. It's exactly the same with learning. When you see the drops on the floor, then you know you're beginning to learn. It's starting, something's happening. That's the precious time that you've got to continue. Until that time, and you're sitting comfortably in your chair or your armchair, or even if you're standing or shopping or whatever it is, and you know, you're learning a little bit. That's not learning. And you have no right to do anything. When you're doing that, when you're in that stance, you have no right to do anything more than read. You certainly don't have a right to expect to understand. What one must understand is that it's not necessarily a long-term process in the sense that you can never be mechadesh until you've become a total eved Hashem. True, there's no half measures in becoming an Eved Hashem. You can't be half a slave of God. You're either an Eved or you're not an Eved, and there is a certain totality required. But one can almost say that one can achieve that totality at odd moments. One can achieve that totality during short periods, even if one loses it a little bit afterwards. And that means the following, that there are two progress programs one has to follow. The one is the program, a long-term program of becoming somebody who can afford the luxury of acting spontaneously. And that's something very urgent. We've got to develop that quickly, because otherwise we become clockwork people. It's terribly urgent that we should develop the right and the ability to act spontaneously. Because either way, we're either going to act spontaneously and we're going to be wrong, or we're going to be right and we're not acting spontaneously, until our spontaneous action is the right one. And the only way the spontaneous action can be the right one is when we contain the Torah. When we feel the way the Torah feels, we think the way the Torah feels, we operate the way the Torah operates, then everything you do spontaneously will turn out right. That's the concept of being a Ben Torah, or an Eved Hashem. But one can do it in, that's the long-term program. One wants to be in a situation where one can act spontaneously at all times, and the chances are 99% that what you do is right. But one can also acquire it in short span, so to say. And that is, if you're learning a piece of Gemara, then what do you fix as your aims in that piece of Gemara? Or you're learning a piece of Rashi, or you're learning a Tosfos, or you're learning a piece of Chumash. What are your aims? How far do you go before you say you don't understand? Or how far do you go before you say, I do understand, and close the book? Where are you trying to get? Now, understanding, you must know and remember that whatever you've managed to understand or haven't managed to understand, lo yagati v'matzati al tamin, says the Gemara. If a person says that I didn't work that way, yagia is even more than omar. Yagia is stretching yourself to the absolute maximum. If a person says, I've understood this piece of Torah without yagia, don't believe him, he's telling a lie. Either he did have yagia or he doesn't understand. There's no way you can understand a piece of Torah without yagia. That's how Torah is designed. And it's designed like that for a reason, because it's only in the yagia, it's only in that toil that you start becoming a Torah person. When you do exercises, the first 5 minutes when you're not sweating yet, that's not exercise yet. It doesn't affect you at all. It's only when you start sweating that every second of exercise is relevant, and every second of exercise is having an effect on you. When you're sweating and your eyes are tired and your body is tired and you're sweating away and you're working and working physically, not just intellectually, your whole body has to be tired out from the learning. At those moments, every moment that you're learning is so precious, because every moment during that period is forming you. It's making you into this mold. That's the thing which is really turning you into a Ben Torah, and without that, it's all fake. Without that, it's all superficial. You're not becoming a Ben Torah at all. You have a veneer. You've adopted a veneer of doing things right. But you're not acquiring Torah. You're not turning yourself into a Torah person at all. It's impossible. How far does the Yagir go? I told somebody this week that Reb Shimon Shkof, the same Reb Shimon Shkof, went to Valojna Yeshiva, which was the first modern type of yeshiva that was ever made by a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, Reb Chaim Valojna, about 150 years ago. At the time, the Netziv, who we just quoted, was the Rosh Yeshiva. And Reb Shimon Shkof, as a young man of about 20, went to Valojna to learn, and on principle he didn't go into the Netziv Shiurim. Because, as we said, Reb Shimon was a person who believed very much in originality. That one has to develop and evolve one's own approach. So firstly, he didn't like the idea of going to anybody's shiur, and certainly not the Netziv, so he considered was on the wrong track. So I think he was the only one in the yeshiva who didn't go into the shiur. Everybody else went to Valojin because of the Netziv shiur. That's why you went to Valojin. He goes to Valojin, he won't go into the Netziv shiur. One night he's standing up in the early hours of the morning, standing and he's learning away there. I can imagine Reb Shimon learning, and he's battling the Rashbam on Bava Basra. All of a sudden he feels somebody's around. He looks up Netziv says to him, what are you doing here so early in the morning? Didn't enter Reb Shimon Shkof to say, what are you doing here so early in the morning? But Netziv, that was obviously normal time for learning. During the daytime he worked, and during the night time he learned. So Reb Shimon says, I'm battling with this Rashbam. I've been busy on it all day, and I'm not going to sleep until I understand it. It's as simple as that. I can't go to sleep until I understand it. That Reb Shimon thought was Omar Latoro. I can't go to sleep until I've understood it. So the Netziv, go to sleep. He said, I've battled with that Rashbam for years and years. He says, I've even gone to the cemetery and I've stood by the gravesides of my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. I've been mispallowed to the Ribbono Shel Olam that he should explain to me that Rashbam. I still don't know it. And suddenly hit Reb Shimon Shkof. A man who takes Yagia in Torah that far, that even after he's toiled for months and months the way he's toiling tonight, Reb Shimon thinks, I'm working hard tonight. I want to understand this Rashbam, and I won't go to bed until I understand it. And that by him is working hard. Then the Tzid comes along and says, I worked like that for months and months, and I still went further before I gave up. I went out to the cemetery. And the Tzid was a busy man. I went out to stand by the kever. I went out to stand at the grave of my family so that there should be some schus, because of their schus, if not because of my schus, and in honor of them, that I should understand that maybe that would help. That's how far the Netziv went, to understand one Rashbam in Bava Basra. You know, we open a Gemara and we look through it, and it doesn't make sense, so we can't understand it. and we expect to get anything out of it. Or we work on it, and we work on it, 2 hours, 3 hours we work on it, and we have coffee in between, and we have a little chat, and we carry on working a little bit more, and we come and we think that we've understood it, we know the Gemara, we can tell this is what Rashi says, and this is what Tosafot says, and this is the machlokes between them, we know everything. We know nothing. And the chant is all that is distorted. So we have to aim, at least if we're not able yet to achieve the totality of Avodah, that we are totally spontaneous, and that everything we do is automatically that which the Rabbeinu Shalom wants, we have to at least develop it in certain areas. And Talmud Torah is one of the important areas, because that's where you mold yourself into a Ben Torah, through the toil of Torah. No shortcut, toil, that's what it means, sweating. And the other is through Shmiras HaMitzvahs, the same sweating. You know, mitzvahs also exercises. Those mitzvahs which are coming to you easily, you're not doing well enough. Now, there's no exercise which you can do easily. I stand in the class and I'm the most unfit of all, and I find that the others are battling as hard as I'm battling. What's going on? They're doing the exercises better than I'm doing. You know, I'm only lifting my leg halfway up, and they're lifting it all the way up, and they're doing it with the right timing, and they're doing it with the right breathing and everything. Sure, they're battling. Each person battles on the level on which he's operating, if you're striving to operate on your maximum level. But the moment you can do the exercise easily, you must know you're not doing it right. And it's the same with any mitzvah. If any mitzvah comes to you easily, no, you're not doing it right. You're not putting in enough effort. You have to sweat on a mitzvah too. You have to be tired at the end of a mitzvah. You've got to feel that you've exerted yourself at the end of the mitzvah. Because otherwise, your actions will be okay, but you'll never become an Eved Hashem. And this, I believe, is why Chazal say that the Mishkan was mechaper on the eagle. The Mishkan was atoned for the golden calf. What's the golden calf? The golden calf is I'll design my own idea of godliness. That's it, no plan. Beauty, aesthetics, gold, symbolism. Let's get together. We're the Jews. We're the brightest people in the world, after all. Can't we design ourselves a golden calf? The equivalent of a Mishkan Mahavdil. They didn't want to worship the golden calf. They wanted it like they wanted the Mishkan. They wanted certain physical things to relate to do things with, to have them. You can imagine how difficult it was. They didn't have the Torah yet. And they didn't have the Mishkan. So there were no physical mitzvahs yet that they could really cleave to and really get stuck into. They needed something. That was the purpose of designing the golden calf. The Mishkan comes, it's exactly the opposite. No, none of your own designs. We're dealing with absolutes here. This isn't art. This is absolute. And the absolute is, it's going to be the way I want it designed. What impressed Moshe Rabbeinu, and this must have made his 40 years worthwhile, this surprised him, was Malacha as well. It was originality. They studied the plans and threw them out. That was the incredible thing. That they absorbed those plans, they integrated those plans so thoroughly that they could allow themselves to act totally spontaneously and to produce exactly what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted. And that's what the Psukim mean. Kechol asher tzivah Hashem et Moshe, exactly as God had explained to Moshe, kein asu b'nei Yisrael et kol ha'avodah. So the Jews did the whole avodah, the whole avdus. They dedicated themselves to absorbing totally that which the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wanted. And therefore, that's why, Vayar Moshe et kol ha'melacha, that when Moshe saw the extent of melacha, the extent of artwork, v'hinei asu oto atasher tzivo Hashem kein asu. And not only, as Hirsch says, v'hinei asu oto, they did it. This was the thing that amazed him. That it was them. It was their own, the work of their own hands and their own spontaneity and their own artistic feeling. And nevertheless, it was kasher tzivo Hashem kein asu. It turned out just like God wanted it. That was something that Hinei, that was something that was amazing to Moshe, and it drew out of Moshe a spontaneous Vayavarech Oysan Moshe. All Moshe could do was say Vishakev. This is incredible. A brocha. And we learn from here that one man can bless another man. This is the only case in the Torah of a brocha apart from Kahuna, apart from the Kohanim. It's only from here that we learn that you don't have to be a Kohen to bless. You need to get excited. You can't just, you know, bless. You've got to get excited about something. We've discussed that before. That's why Yitzchak instructed Esav to bring him a meal before he gave him the brocha. All sorts of things. One can't just give a brocha without a real feeling of excitement. But this was enough to get out of that same stern Moshe. Moshe was always screaming at the people, shouting at the people, complaining about the people. Wants to get out of it, didn't want to get them in the first place. This enables him to be mevarech. Really, this is wonderful. And what is his brocha, says Rashi? Amar lehem, he said to them, Yehi ratzon shetishroch shchino b'maaseh yedeche. May the Shechina find itself on the achievements of your hands. Because you've done something incredible. You've used your hands, you've used your abilities, and the Shechina's been there. It's come out like the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted it. May that always be the case. An incredible bracha. In fact, it comes from the Hinoam, which we say on the Shabbos. To have the Shekhinah in one's achievements, there's only one way that can be. It's not miraculous, it's not something that just happens, it's not favoritism. The Shekhinah is in one's achievements if one acts as an Eved Hashem. If one does it the way they do, but it starts off as an Avodah, it starts off as hard work, and then it becomes a Malacha, then the Ribbono Shel Olam is there. And one has to understand that the Avodah, the Omal of Torah, is not really in the Chiddush. To make the Chiddush is not where you need the Omal. The Avodah is to get to the point that you're ready to make a Chiddush. The Avodah is understanding what's there. In understanding the Gemara, in understanding the Rashi, understanding the Tosfos, understanding the Chumash, whatever it is, listening to a Shir and understanding it thoroughly. I always say, I don't expect everybody, or I don't require everybody to agree with my Shir. I've learned more from the things I've disagreed with than from the things I've agreed with. It's not required that you agree with me. What is required is that you understand me. That the understanding is complete, total, and thorough. If after that you choose to disagree, that's fine, that's your business, that's okay. If you can convince me of your disagreement, I'll change my mind. And if you don't, it doesn't matter, we can still disagree. But one thing that can't be tolerated is not understanding. Because not understanding simply means no Omar. It's not important enough for you to understand. That's why the Avodah section comes in your case, in understanding a Shir thoroughly. And getting back to the sources and seeing it inside, and learning the Rishonim, and learning the Rashi, and learning the Gemara, and remembering it, and integrating it, and making it part of you. When you've got that, the Chiddush will come to you just like that. It will just happen. You'll have an inspiration, a feeling of an avenue to explore, and you'll wake up in the middle of the night, and you'll quickly open your Gemara to see if that's what Rashi says, because you worked out in the night. And if that's what Rashi says, then you've got a whole theory worked out. You'll open up, and it is what Rashi says. Or it isn't what Rashi says, but Tosfos asks on Rashi, why doesn't he say that? And then you've got something to put together, and there's something working out, and then you're a Kli. After you've sweated over Torah, you're entitled to do that, and what you say will be valid. It will be good. It might be wrong, but it will be valid. It might not be substantiated, but it will be valid. It will be Torah. It will take its part in Torah. Even those things in the Gemara which we don't accept as halacha, they form part of Torah. One doesn't have to agree with everything, and everything doesn't have to be strictly right in connection with, in terms of halacha, in order to make it acceptable in Torah. It can be a good kasha, it can be a good question, which is a chiddush. It can be an answer to a question, it can be an observation, it can be anything, but not before the omel and the yagia, not before the hard work. It just doesn't work that way. And once one's found oneself in a situation of hard work, and one's turned oneself into a kli, then one can know that one can start relaxing, one can start sprouting out, one can start doing things and saying things. And provided the Yiru Shemayim is there and the continued Avodah is there, the chances are that will be the Chelkeinu B'Torah Techov. That will be the part of the Torah which the Torah is waiting for us to give, and which the Ribbono Shel Olam is waiting for us to give.